Welcome to the How to Hide a Dead Body podcast. I'm Patrick Gilbert, Executive Director at Adventure Media Group. This is a podcast where we discuss digital advertising, marketing, and other topics related to business consulting and career growth. I'm joined today, as always, by our CEO, Isaac Radansky, and our Adventure Media's content queen, Danielle Immerman. And today, I'm really excited for what we have in store. We brought on a special guest, and this podcast has been on my radar for a long time. I've wanted to have this conversation. I wanted to bring this guest on, and I am humbled by the opportunity to be able to have this conversation. Joining us is Michael Ringenbach. He is he has sort of an expansive resume. Mike has a master's degree in public health. He's pursuing a PhD in public administration and writing a dissertation on peer-to-peer fundraising. He also serves as the associate director of an organization called Four Diamonds, which is based out of Penn State Hershey Children's Hospital. Mike, thank you for coming on. I want to start, can you just give us the overview of Four Diamonds and talk about kind of the things that are going on there and what you guys work on?
Sure. Well, thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity. Four Diamonds is a childhood cancer gift fund located at Penn State Children's Hospital. And we really help families and kids who are battling childhood cancer in a few different ways. First of all, we make sure that they never see a bill for their care. So anybody who comes into Penn State Children's Hospital will never receive a bill. We surround all of our kids with an outstanding support system of specialists, child life specialists and music therapists and art therapy and nutritionists to ensure that they have the best chance possible to beat their disease. And then kind of the last area that Four Diamonds focuses on is funding innovative research. And that research we conduct at Penn State Children's Hospital and Penn State College of Medicine, but we share that freely around the world. And so we're not just helping kids in Hershey, Pennsylvania, but we're helping kids everywhere. And our organization, the amazing thing about Four Diamonds is that we're primarily funded by students who are really passionate about our cause. Penn State Dance Marathon, which Patrick and I both participated in back in our days at Penn State. And then also high school and middle school and elementary school students across Pennsylvania and beyond. Really consist of the bulk of our fundraising. So we're very fortunate and we're doing a lot of good work helping kids battle childhood cancer.
So yeah, I guess that's kind of the connection for anyone that's unaware of this. So I met Mike originally in college briefly, but then we worked together at Four Diamonds. So this is actually my former employer. I started my career working at the organization he's still with. And I actually say all the time, Mike is the reason that I first became interested in the topic or concept of data science and being able to look at statistics and data in a different way. And Mike really came into Four Diamonds at a time when it was a small, very analog organization and helped transform it into a modern data-driven powerhouse. So, Mike, just describe like what is your role, and how has this changed over time?
Yeah. So when I first started, I mostly just helped oversee our online fundraising for our mini fund program, which is mostly high school students and below. And over the years, I've adapted and changed into a variety of roles at Four Diamonds. Right now, in my associate director role, I oversee the data and analytics for all of our fundraising programs. And I also do a lot of coaching of our students at Penn State FON and other organizations on how they can successfully, fundraise using peer-to-peer techniques and digital marketing techniques.
So what is like the state of play right now for fundraising in general, especially with everything that's happened in the last year? It's placed a greater emphasis on online fundraising, especially for a lot of organizations that relied on in-person events. So what has that been like, and what do you think what's going to stick moving forward?
Yeah. So it's a really interesting time in fundraising right now. You know, you hear about unprecedented times and how overused that word is, but this really is truly remarkable times in the state of fundraising. What we've seen is that there hasn't been as big of a drop-off with larger and middle-level donors, but small donors have dropped off. So there's been kind of a widening or more of an inequality with the types of gifts. So organizations that are relying on larger gifts, for the most part, are doing okay. I'm actually just fresh off of the Peer-to-Peer Professionals Forum, which conducted a study for 2020 and how organizations that do peer-to-peer fundraising, and peer-to-peer fundraising means you have participants that are usually doing an activity that are then asking their friends and family for money. So it's a lot of walks and bike rides and endurance
5Ks.
Events, 5Ks. You know, New York City Marathon is a great peer-to-peer event. And those events saw about the top ones saw about a 30 to 40% reduction in their revenue in 2020 compared to the same events in 2019. And there were a few events that actually increased their revenue. And those events were the ones that were virtual only. So the ones that were already well adapted in the digital space, didn't rely on a physical event, really were the ones that raised the most money. Those include things like gaming marathons or other online marathons.
Interesting. So now what does this shift look like? I know that I think some marathons are happening, but they're not having any fans come. So even if we go back to this arena where we can have in-person events, it's going to look very different. And the fundraising model is going to have to look very different. It's going to have to continue to rely on online efforts. So what do you think that shift is going to look like?
Yeah, I think it's going to be two parts. One is in 2021 here, how do organizations, you know, adapt with maybe some of the standards and precautions that are still in place? So for virtual events, you know, do you ship out boxes to runners who run across the world, and do you have apps to track that? Do you have the technology in order to kind of aggregate that information and kind of have a collective experience? Some of the reasons why these fundraising events are so successful is because people feel part of something. And that's much harder to replicate behind a Zoom screen or any type of screen, right? And then replicating that is still hard. But then beyond 2021 or beyond once we get through the pandemic, it's how do we take the lessons of the last few years here and really apply them to events moving forward? Do you do more hybrid events where people could maybe participate in a marathon or participate in a 5K at a big, cool physical event, but also participate around the world maybe beforehand or Zoom in or have some sort of technology piece? So there's going to be a lot of really exciting opportunities, I think.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I think, I mean, we work with a handful of clients that do some sort of events, and with the shift to online over the last year or so, one of our clients runs an award ceremony, and they're working with augmented reality technology that can actually deliver like a trophy. So like everyone shipped a box and you come up and it's as if it's like a hologram of a trophy that you can kind of look at the Zoom, and that's kind of your award or whatever. So I can certainly appreciate that. Other people have said, like, you know, instead of when you go to a conference and you have the catered lunch, that everyone all of a sudden gets dropped an Uber Eats gift card like into their email at noon, and everyone is encouraged to sort of eat lunch together. So I think that sort of innovation is interesting, especially if it can be effective. Let's talk about the Penn State Dance Marathon. And so the reason that this podcast is timely is because that organization, which is completely run by students, achieved something, now it's 2 weeks ago, but achieved something within the last month that a lot of people thought was impossible. This is an event that it was always relied on in person. It is the sort of thing that you have to see it to really understand what it really is. It's just, you can see photos and videos, but it really does not do justice. And when this was, when it came out that this was, you know, obviously everything was going to have to be virtual, a lot of people, a lot of alumni, a lot of donors, a lot of supporters to this organization, consciously or not, like sort of wrote this off as, okay, you know, they're going to raise some money, but it's just not going to be the same. They went out and raised $10.6 million, which is an astounding amount of money. How did they pull it off?
Yeah. You know, first of all, the students at Penn State who pulled it off are unbelievable. You know, I have the chance to work closely throughout the year with the student leadership. And, you know, every single year, they're remarkably talented and committed and dedicate literally 40, 50, 60 hours a week to making that organization and that dance marathon happen. I think one of the things that they did this year that was really smart was they made a decision pretty early. They had decided all the way in August that their February dance marathon was going to be virtual.
And there's always been issues with like flu season and immunocompromised children and all these different things. So this is something that's sort of been on the radar long before COVID was a thing.
Absolutely. You know, our Four Diamonds families and kids, you know, are under a lot of oftentimes undergoing treatment. So we want to create as safe of an environment as possible for them. But they made a decision early and really focused on a couple things. You know, obviously, how do they continue to fundraise and teach other students how to fundraise? But then also, how do they start producing 46 hours of content that is compelling? So historically, the dance marathon is 46 hours, no sitting, no sleeping. That wasn't going to be possible this year, but they were going to be doing a live stream for 46 hours. And figuring out how to do content for that long and keep it compelling throughout the entire weekend was obviously a big task, but I think one that they pulled off very successfully.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you want to talk a little bit about the whole social media theory? Because I think that's sort of the X factor in all of this.
During Con Weekend, the event is typically 46 hours and students are on their phones, not too often direct throughout the weekend. It's super high energy. Lots going on stage. It's really a rock concert happening for 46 hours. And what we saw this year was with everybody watching the live stream, the social media traffic was unbelievable. You know, paid social media is a great tool, but having thousands and thousands of people, and Thon had announced about 175,000 people had tuned into their live stream throughout the weekend. But having thousands and thousands of people share on your behalf and like other people's content about that same topic is still unbelievably powerful on social media. You know, what you've seen over the years with paid advertisements or brands' organic posts not doing as well, you know, individuals' posts are still prioritized on Facebook, especially when they're, you know, especially when they are being liked and shared immediately. Absolutely. Yeah. So having these virtual events, you know, engagement is always kind of an X factor. And what we saw kind of counterintuitively that social media engagement was through the roof because everybody was really sharing and excited.
And it certainly did a lot to raise awareness and to continue to keep people engaged throughout the entire event. And I think that there's something that can be this entire topic here, I think, really relates to really any business that's doing anything online or any sort of event-based organization that's trying to drum up awareness for really anything. Because one of the reasons why I find fundraising so fascinating is because you're not selling a product. You're selling an idea. You're selling a promise by saying, hey, listen, give me your money, and instead of giving you something, I'm going to take this money and do something great with it. And you have to believe in me, and you have to believe in what I'm doing with it. And that is really, really hard. And I think that there's a lot that salespeople and marketing people can learn by studying hard-nosed fundraising tactics and these sorts of things, because it is challenging to get people to willingly give up their money. Do you think that there's, in this idea of social media and creating buzz and awareness, every time you go to an event, there's a hashtag. They try to do this thing and it just like never works. Is there anything that stood out to you that you've learned over the last couple weeks from this event that you think other people can take with them?
Yeah, I think you know, is that they had an unbelievable weekend in terms of engagement and excitement. But they really worked to curate that loyalty well before Thon weekend. In fact, they've done it over years. And what happens is, what I think happened was, you know, they, for so many years, Thon has been such an amazing event. It's given volunteers and donors and Four Diamonds families, you know, such an amazing experience. And what they saw this year was that when they couldn't have this in-person event, now they did film some of the stuff live and they had a live type production, but it was in an empty arena that could only have about 100 people in it. What they saw was they were able to kind of mobilize all of those people from the past and say, look what we're doing this year. This event that meant so much to you in your life, you're overcoming, you know, we're overcoming this obstacle and we're going to do it. And it's going to be awesome. And we're still going to show support to kids who are battling cancer.
I can see that. Go on.
And that's one of the differences and something that, you know, digital marketers should kind of think about with working with nonprofits is, you know, for nonprofits, you don't just want to think about the immediate ask. You know, if you're selling sometimes a product, you want people to get the landing page and you want to have that best conversion rate and you want to have, you know, the transaction happen quickly sometimes and really just try to sell as much as possible. But for nonprofits, you're really trying to sell your mission and you're trying to sell loyalty to your organization. You want people to be repeat donors. You want people to come back and stay in the fold. You want people to volunteer for you. You want people to have fundraising pages for you. And eventually down the line, you want people, especially people of high capacity, to make a large, substantial donation to you. And that just doesn't happen with one click through. It takes repeated action, which is hard in communication.
I think that presents an interesting, like, psychological case study because we deal with a lot of businesses, e-commerce or whatever, where, you know, the revenue officer or the owner of the business will say, you know, I'm in this for the long haul. I'm willing to acquire a customer at a loss because I want to be able to develop brand loyalty. And I'm willing to make an investment in the future and cultivate the right audiences. But when push comes to shove, there is an immediate level of greed that comes with this. And we've seen that happen with our clients of saying like, yeah, you know, we've outlined our goals. We know that you would rather, like you've said, that you'd rather a higher volume of customers at a lower profit because you're playing the long game. But ultimately, you know, they have investors that are looking at numbers and all these different things. On the nonprofit side, you really don't have that option. Like nonprofits are sort of, it's built into the system of saying like, we would rather one person donate a dollar or we would rather 100 people donate a dollar than one person donate $100, 10 out of 10 times or 100 out of 100 times, whatever it is, because you scale by volume and you just know that you're playing the long game. And there's really no opportunity to build in that greed. And ultimately, when you're trying to pull off something like this, which a lot of people thought was impossible, that's when it comes back to really benefit you.
Absolutely. And I do think, you know, if you have tracking mechanisms set in place in your online fundraising portal and you can set up, you know, refer tokens and tags and Google and things like that to track how much comes from each ad. You know, if you have a development director that's looking at it, oh, well, we spent $1,000 on these donation ads and returned $2,000, you know, that might not be the best metric to look at. It's really how many new donors did we bring into our system? How many new supporters and how can we capture them over the long haul to really, you know, improve upon what we do at Four Diamonds.
So I want to dive a little bit deeper into your role specifically, because like I said earlier, you stepped in where there was, the data didn't even exist yet. The first data set that I'm pretty sure you were set to work on was a clunky Excel document that had historic or previous year's information from the Minithon program, which is high schools, middle schools, some elementary schools that also have their own fundraising events that are also remarkable. Mm-hmm. And everyone should check that out. And now, like, that led to a decision to make a further investment into a better online fundraising program that led to a slew of other decisions that really helped you guys become a data-driven organization. Like, I don't even know if Google Analytics existed on the Four Diamonds website before you came on board. So what has that whole journey been like? And what can other people that are in a similar role where it's like, I don't even know where to start. Like, how have you figured out the direction that you need to take this organization from a data standpoint?
Right. That's a great question. I've been on staff closing in on 8 years here this summer. And the first piece of advice I'd give is that it's incremental, right? Is you don't have to build a full-fledged data analytics program right off the bat. But what you should start doing is start thinking immediately about what are the data pieces that matter for our organization? What are the things that we can reasonably track in a amount of time? You know, some data is harder to get than others. Now there's a lot more tracking available with online things and online stores and stuff like that. But, you know, what are the data points that matter and can we correlate them to success? And then that will help guide how you start building out your other data structures. And it's not just showing your staff, oh, I collected all this data and I crunched the numbers and the R-squared value is this and it's really good and that's statistically important, right? It's really about showing how this data can influence and improve upon what the end goal is. It's saying, if we do this, we're going to raise more money to help kids who are battling cancer. And at the end of the day, being able to translate that is an incredibly important skill. It's not just enough to do the data analytics. It's being able to translate it to people so that they can have actual insights on how to continue to improve upon the process.
So I've experienced a lot of that where you have a data scientist that can run those sorts of analyses. And then there's always that missing connection between that final result and then what it actually means when you're translating that to the business stakeholder or the client. Mm-hmm. How have you gotten better or how have you really developed that ability to translate that story? What has really worked well?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think it's been possible because I've had a boss at Four Diamonds who's really supported me in doing this. So having your leadership buy-in is essential. Having your leadership tell other people, you know, listen to the data, we're going to follow it, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. But in order to get the staff to buy in order to get better at that, it's not just enough to crunch the numbers once and kind of say, hey, this is what we're going to do. It's also figuring out a system for constant feedback. It's saying, hey, we did this, we modified our behavior in another way or changed this within our business process. Here's the feedback and here's how it improved because of this analysis or because of this behavior change. And that's basically a constant cycle. And then every year it gets better and better and people buy in more.
And you mentioned before about trying to figure out what are those data points that really matter for your organization. I imagine that sort of evolves over time. Like when you're starting out and there's not a lot of structures in place to track much of anything, you're probably just looking at the basics of total donations, unique donations, and total funds raised. And then I'm sure that has changed over time. Maybe I'm wrong, but like, what has that been like?
Yeah, so at the end of the day, there's still going to be your top line functions that matter for a nonprofit, for-profit, whatever type of organization you're in. You know, total revenue matters, you know, your net profit matters, right? And that's not going to change. That's kind of your outcome measure. We've probably added in a couple hundred variables over the years that we track in terms of fundraiser success and donation success and participant success. And those have evolved as we've had access to information. They've also evolved as our platforms that we use have added in new tools. And they've also evolved kind of in a way that we'll take a look at different subsets for those variables now, meaning that maybe in the first couple of years of a fundraiser, do we look at some variables that matter? And then as they mature, maybe they matter less. And we'll also look at new different outcome measures, retention, growth, things like that. And so as you continue to build, it really kind of expands upon itself. I would caution against, though, is, you know, I mentioned we use a couple hundred variables, getting too bogged down in the weeds. Once you find that something doesn't matter, kind of ignore it unless you need to track it for some other reason.
Right. I think that's an issue that a lot of people face. When you log into any of these platforms, whether it's Google Analytics, Google Ads, Facebook Ads, or any of the programs that you're using, you're just immediately presented with a ton of different metrics and information. And it sort of makes it seem as if all of it's important. And it absolutely isn't. The thing is, you have your KPIs, the things that really matter, whether it's total revenue, profit, whatever, quantity of donations and unique donors. The rest of the metrics are really there to help tell the story. You know what I mean? Like when you're looking at, okay, we raised $10,000, and then you're trying to say like, okay, well, how many individual donors, and what was the standard deviation of those donors, and what was the average, and what was all these different things to get a better understanding, which then translates into the story that you're conveying to the non-data people about how to actually turn this into action. And that's something that I think a lot of people have missed the point on, that regardless of what sort of data you're working with. How your, for the most part, like in your specifically in Four Diamonds, I'm pretty sure like the data buck stops with you, right? Like there's no one else, like you're looked at as like the main subject matter expert on this material, mm-hmm. correct?
That's correct. Yep.
How do you stay sharp, and how do you continue to get better at this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm fortunate enough to work, you know, at Four Diamonds, we're part of the Penn State University ecosystem. So I've been, when I did my master's, I learned took a lot of statistics classes on public health. And there's actually a lot of correlation between public health data and fundraising data, in the sense that the statistical methods that you use are the same. It's trying to figure out percentages of populations, or trying to identify maybe someone who's like 1 in 10,000 that can maybe make a major gift, or someone who's 1 in 10,000 that has a disease, right?
Interesting.
But at the end of the day, I think it's all professionals need to stay sharp, and figuring out the best way to do that. You know, I listen to podcasts. I listen to a lot of these podcasts just to keep up on digital marketing and kind of the trends that you guys have. But I also am taking a look at people who do fundraising data on Twitter. So there's a few professionals that tweet. There's conferences that are professional conferences. So it really is trying to stay sharp in any way possible. But it's something that I really do try to dedicate or set aside some time to every month. So I'll set aside, if there's workshops being offered or trainings, or there's online trainings through like LinkedIn Learning, for example, I'll usually try to set aside like maybe a Friday afternoon and do some of those and make sure that I'm staying current and sharp.
Interesting. Yeah, I've always like been fascinated by that, because at some point there has to be self-motivation for anybody to be able to stay relevant in their field, especially in the work that you do. I think the work that we do is very similar, where it's like this stuff can change in 6 months, and if you're not on the ball, it's going to blow right by you. Is there anything, I mean, you know, you talked a lot about some statistical models and just kind of the way that some more broad data analytics type of work. Is there anything in particular that you would recommend to somebody that's like sort of fresh in this and looking to sharpen their skills?
Yeah, I think a skill set. So a lot of people, when you're in school or something like that, you're learning the statistical methods of how to analyze data and seeing stuff. But I think in the real world, one of the hardest things to do, especially in our line of work, is to figure out which data is valid and how to clean your data. Mm. Really make sure that it's, when you're doing your analysis, that you're actually analyzing the right thing. So practicing data cleaning techniques is really important. And the other thing is figuring out the system within your company or your nonprofit or your business to store that data, but also then translate it into actionable insights? Do you use some sort of dashboarding or reporting or regular updates? Do you send out a weekly email with certain KPIs? Whatever system works best for your organization, that I think is an important part of the data scientist in order to keep them accountable and kind of keep updating, looking at the data, but then also keep it in front of mind for the staff that these are kind of what we're focusing on. Here are the metrics that we can influence.
Interesting. Very cool. So in the nonprofit space, there's generally not a lot of marketing budget to go around. It forces you to bootstrap a little bit, forces you to get creative. And like, that's sort of why like you necessarily didn't have a marketing role, but you've had to like figure out how Facebook ads works and like a lot of other random things to like at some point step in and learn some of these things. Mm-hmm. What is just that whole experience like? And I think one thing I'm curious about is like, if you were given if a larger marketing budget was thrown on your lap, what's on the wish list? Like, what's something that you would want to be able to bring into the Four Diamonds organization?
Yeah. You know, so we're lucky that in-house we can do kind of some of the basic stuff. You know, we can run some Facebook ads on our own. We have Google Analytics set up on our website and then also all of our donation websites. But I think one of the things that we haven't been able to do, say we had a huge donor give us a bunch of money for our marketing budget, is tell our story, particularly using video, to a really broad audience. So we have a lot of really amazing videos of our Four Diamonds kids who are, you know, talking about their journeys with childhood cancer and their treatment and overcoming their cancer. And it would be really amazing to be able to share those with a much broader audience right now. And then maybe bring them through a Facebook engagement or a Google type engagement ladder, you know, if people engage and then you can kind of serve them more ads or bring them along their journey. But that's expensive to do. And at the end of the day, our mission is to fund research and to help kids. So it's always figuring out that balance of what are we spending on advertising versus what are we spending for our mission. And that's something that the public is very attuned to, right? I don't know how many times you all have heard stories of, oh, the CEO gets paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for a large charity, or they misspent funds, or they took a private jet somewhere. And, you know, we're very, very careful. All of our dollars are allocated down to the $50 level in our budget. And we're very, very careful to not, you know, misspend our money. And it makes sure that what really happens is then you end up probably being a little conservative on how you spend dollars. So, and I know that's the case for many nonprofits. You know, it's always a balance of marketing dollars versus what's going towards your mission.
Yeah, it's an added stress or kind of like that voice in the back of your mind every time you're trying to make a decision that you ultimately know is going to be good for the organization and probably a worthy investment to make that will result in more donations and ultimately more research. But ultimately, you have that fear of saying, well, if this doesn't work out, like, we're going to have stakeholders that we're going to need to answer to. Like, it's such an added level of complexity. Every single decision that is made is scrutinized at every single level, and it's picked apart in so many different levels. And that's something that I don't think a lot of people truly appreciate. It is very, very tough to do that. But so you said on the video side. So video production, though, I know is something that you guys have done. So is it like good production, or are you really saying that you guys need better just storytelling and just like more of like a brand sort of voice? Like, what do you really think is like the main opportunity there?
Yeah. So I think the people who do our marketing and storytelling are excellent. They do a really good job. The problem is that there's only so many hours in the day. And there's, if you run an ad with a story or a video, you know, only, you know, reaches so, you know, a finite amount of people on Facebook. So I think we have really good family stories right now. But, you know, to spend a whole bunch of money, like a for-profit company would, to drop hundreds of thousands of dollars on an ad to share that story broadly, you know, isn't something that we've kind of put in the cards. And for good reason, we haven't necessarily, been able to justify doing that yet, because we haven't, necessarily played around with the dollars, if that makes sense.
I hear that. And it's, I think it's, you could also look at it from a different angle and say, well, the family stories, we know that they work, but maybe there's something we haven't tried yet that doesn't work. But
right.
What level of investment would be necessary for us to actually prove that? Or would it be a waste? And then we would have to live with that. And that's very tough. I mean, personally, like one of the things that I think is undervalued from the whole Four Diamonds ecosystem is the amount of like the fact that it's so unique and that there's so many students that go through either Penn State Dance Marathon or all these other mini-thon organizations. I mean, what are the numbers on mini-thon involvement?
Yeah, so last year we had about 75 schools involved with about 90,000 participants.
It's incredible,
and it's a lot of students, and it's a lot of individuals who all have great stories. You know, it'd be amazing to do a video on each one of those events, right? It would be amazing, about every year at Penn State Children's Hospital, we have about 100 kids that come in who are newly diagnosed with childhood cancer. It'd be amazing to capture and tell all of those stories.
Every single story.
And all of those journeys, but it's just, there's only so many people who are working on it. There's only so much budget and there's only so much time.
Yeah. It is incredible though. So we're talking 90,000 basically high school students plus an additional, I don't know what the numbers are that they say for thon involvement, if it's 10 or 15 or 12, somewhere in that range that gets estimated every year. Mm-hmm. It, and all these people that are impacted in such a meaningful way, because I think that a lot of people think like, oh, that's a nice thing that you do. Like, I will forever say that my involvement with that was the cornerstone experience that helped me in my career. The leadership experience, the project management experience, being able to bootstrap with no budget, like these are the sorts of things. So for anybody, I mean, I really, really care. I really, really believe in this, that everything that we've been talking about how hard it is to learn how to sell an idea and how the skills you can learn from being involved in a philanthropic organization. You have the side of it where you're raising money for a great cause that you believe in. And that is incredible in its own area. But the other benefits that come with it of having to figure out how to drive a fundraising organization with very little budget that most people don't get access to, and being a high school student and trying to organize your friend group to be able to also buy into this concept of raising money and getting their friends and family involved and so on and so forth. It is absolutely remarkable. And I think just everything that you guys are doing is so great. And it's been incredible to watch you guys grow over the years. I honestly, I can't believe now, like when I see the numbers of how many people you have on staff, how many labs now exist that are doing research, how many researchers are on staff, it is just absolutely remarkable. And you guys should be incredibly proud of it.
Well, thanks, Patrick. That was nice of you to say. And it takes effort to do that. It's, putting a strategy in place and then executing that strategy. We're lucky that we have, I think, some of the best supporters in the world, and we're helping an unbelievable cause. And putting a strategy in place to really kind of catalyze or empower those supporters to continue to help us has been a really meaningful part of my career. And it's something I'm very grateful for.
Amazing. If you were to give advice to somebody that had similar interests to you, sort of in the data side, a little bit of experience in a few different areas, what sort of advice would you go back and say, hey, this is really what you need to learn, what you need to do to be able to understand what needs to be done to achieve essentially what you've achieved?
Yeah, I think, and this is a skill set that, I think is essential in an agency or a for-profit business or a nonprofit business, is we're in such a competitive environment anymore that you need to be able to learn and adapt and figure out how you learn. I was a biology major in college. I do marketing and data analytics and fundraising and analytics for our organization. And I had to teach myself, and you know, I had a good background in science and the scientific method, but I've had to teach myself throughout the years how to do a lot of this and figure out ways to check myself to make sure that I'm doing it correctly, or get people to double check things, or you know, check with external advisors. And being able to learn and adapt throughout your career anymore is essential. And then figuring out how to take what you learn and transform the company that you're working for or the nonprofit organization is just as valuable of a skill. It's, hey, I know how to do this on Google Analytics, or here's what I know about automation and Facebook ads. Here's how I can teach my staff members or coworkers how to do this so we can implement it across our agency and then, or our organization or nonprofit. And then having the humility to say, hey, this is what I'm not that good at, or this is what I don't really understand. And then hiring somebody who's better than you at it, and that someone that you've learned out of. And I think that's something that we've done really well at Four Diamonds. We've brought in a lot of really smart people who I love working with. And any agency or any for-profit organization or any nonprofit that can do that, I think has a really good chance to be successful.
I love that. And I completely agree. Everyone that we've hired is leaps and bounds smarter than myself, at least. So I have to ask, you did read Join or Die.
I did.
As a non-marketer. So Join or Die, Digital Advertising in the Age of Automation, a book that was released in November of this year about all the stuff that we talk about all the time. Mike got a copy, and it was like a very nice thing. And I was like, oh, I really appreciate it. That's great. And then texted me a few weeks later and was like, so I'm like halfway through the book. I have like a couple questions for you. And I was like, dude, you shouldn't be reading this. Like, you don't work in this space. Like, don't, like, please, I appreciate enough that you bought a book, you bought a copy. Like, you don't have to like suffer through it, but you seemed to, and you were like, no, like, I'm taking it. Like, it's actually helpful. What is your, like, be honest, like, what is your take on it?
So first of all, I thought the book was really good. And I'm not just saying that because I'm your friend. I think, as a non-marketer and, you know, I'm not in Google AdWords doing, pay-per-click stuff like every single day. I have a familiarity with it, but I'm not doing all that stuff. But the concepts that you describe in the book, Pat, are really excellent. I like how you're able to translate them across a lot of business fields. So, you know, it's an awesome book. And, you know, everybody who is looking to learn more about digital marketing, not just someone who's in the field, should definitely read it. I will say you probably undersell how bad of a fantasy football player you are. But at the end of the day, the book's very good.
Thanks for that. And I guess I didn't mean to turn this into putting you on the spot for a positive review. That wasn't my intention. But I will say, Mike, like I wouldn't have known like all these topics that I was a marketer coming out of college. Like I thought that, you know, all this other stuff was foreign to me. I could barely do basic functions in Excel at the time. And it was because of like basically your guidance and somehow helping me find an interest in all of these things that all this became possible. So I really do appreciate it. Is there anything like, what do you think is next for Four Diamonds for fundraising? Is there any like kind of closing thoughts you have on this whole topic?
Yeah, I think, it's obviously been a really interesting year or so in the world of fundraising, but I'm really excited about the opportunities, from things that we've learned over this past year, moving forward. So for example, we've done more patient support groups and panels in virtual settings, where we've been able to have more Four Diamonds teams participate in support groups because they're doing it from their homes. We've been able to engage a lot of past supporters or past alumni, using virtual events and Facebook Live and, different Zoom meetings. we've been able to take what happens inside of the hospital and really broadcast that to the world in different types of live settings. So I think it's going to be an exciting time in fundraising if we can figure out how to continue to connect with people in a meaningful way using these new technologies that we've all gotten so much better at over the last year or so.
Amazing. All right. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming on. Looking forward to seeing everything you guys accomplish. And I'm really proud of what you guys have done. I mean, to pull off everything through all the adversity over the last year, it's incredible. And please send my best to the rest of the team at Four Diamonds.
But, all right. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back next week.
Thanks, Mike. This was fantastic.